Okay, so we're jumping from the Chamber of Commerce drawing into Campus Connection. Also, besides Mara, we have Superintendent Erica Kluepainter here, and we're going to be discussing the meeting that's going to be happening tonight. It's a regularly scheduled meeting happening at the high school, middle school library at 7 o'clock. But before 7, there's a student recognition at 6:15?
6:15. Yep, we have lots of kids on the list for all kinds of activities. So 6:15, and we'll feed you some pizza, and yeah, lots of kids on the list. So
okay, mm-hmm. Okay, great. And then there's actually quite a bit on the agenda for the meeting. I don't know. I'm interested actually to find out how much you can share with us about the fiscal year 2019 budget. Like, what do you know now at this point in May for the 2019 fiscal year budget?
Well, we can tell you a few things about May and the budget. The governor just signed actually on Friday. They have committed to flat funding, which is, you know, it's not the $100 increase, but it's, you know,
less.
It's better than a reduction, and also it's better than not finding anything out until the end of July, which has been the last few years. So we are still at the same funding level there, 5930 BSA, which is, you know, which was really what we expected. I mean, we had budgeted for that. So we based it on that for how things are going to look with staffing, and our enrollment trend is down, which is a not great news, but, you know, but that's just the nature of life in small towns. So we're losing a very large senior class, and we're bringing in a smaller kindergarten.
Okay.
So yeah, so losing about 45 kids and bringing in, I think, 32. So that's just kind of how that goes. Next year, I think looking at about the same size of a kindergarten, you know, so it just fluctuates. That's just kind of how it goes.
Seems like there's a lot of babies around town.
There are a lot of babies.
Maybe it's just a kind of a wave that's going to come up and go down.
Yep. And that seems to be how it is. Yeah. Exactly. So I think the next, looking down the road here, two-year-olds and three-year-olds, we've got some pretty large numbers there. So,
okay.
Yeah. So
that's good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, being able to know now has helped, I think. It's a bare bones budget, which is what we do. It's conservative. If we come in with more students, great for us. You know, that's just what we've done the last few years, and that's how we've managed to not be doing what a lot of communities are, which is, you know, handing out pink slips and doing that sort of thing. So still not there, which is great. Helps for people in their, you know, their own just stability in life. It's and for our kids, for consistency. So
yeah, sometimes it's down to the wire, down to
hard. Makes it hard. Mm-hmm. Hard for people to plan, and, you know, just kind of uneasy for people. So that's been a good thing. Been a really good thing. I would say probably the one area that we're doing more, and I know you did the piece on some of the capital projects and some of the things that have come out with maintenance with the ADA improvements and that sort of thing. So I would say that's probably the one area that is changing and looking forward. Like in the past, we've been able, the last couple of years, we've actually been able to transfer some funds in out of our, at the end of the year, into some of those capital funds to be able to build some of those up, which is how we're able to find the participating share for the food service renovation and all those kinds of things. So we're not going to be transferring really any out this year. So, and we're, you know, we're utilizing the capital funds, which is what they're for projects. But, you know, so that's probably one of the biggest changes, I would say, budget-wise, that the last couple of years we've been so conservative that by the end of the year we've been able to actually, you know, move a little bit in there for things like bus transportation and ADA compliance and that sort of thing. So our little nest egg is going to start being used, which is what it's supposed to be. You know, we're supposed to use it, but you want to be able to replenish it a little bit along the way too. So yeah, that's probably the biggest change, I guess.
Yeah, there are a lot of capital projects in the works, and some of it may seem new, but they've actually been on the list for many years.
Mm-hmm.
But then surprise,
yes,
you just find out that funding's actually happening, and which is exciting, but also challenging to get it done.
Yeah, December 17th, 2017. I mean, it was crazy. It literally came that week right before Christmas. We were just like, whoa, okay.
I guess we're going to do
this. It's back on the list.
Yeah.
So, exciting.
Yeah, lots of construction that's going to be happening this summer and then next year, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's exciting. Mm-hmm. It's great to finally see it happening. So, and everything's in place for it. So we're just kind of tweaking things and hopefully having the architects come down in the next few weeks and redo a few of the plans based on things we've already done as a district. And then, yeah, so we're excited. It'll be great.
Yeah.
Cafeterias. Yeah. Very needed. Very needed.
Anything to add, Mara?
Erica paints a really very rosy picture for flat funding from both the state, and we've received the same flat contribution from the borough for years, and Petersburg makes it work, and that's because of the people that we have in place doing that. But you can see that this year we're not able to do some of those transfers, even though we're still budgeting as conservatively as we have before, because costs go up. And that's not something that we can keep within our control. So mm-hmm. flat funding will become a mm-hmm. problem.
Yes.
And it'll be unfortunate. And we have been fortunate over the last few years that we have still been able to, you know, our teachers have been stretching themselves mm-hmm. to make things work within the school, because we didn't want to hire an extra teacher that we might have to fire at the end of the year because of flat funding.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, it goes out to the staff over there at the schools that they're making flat funding look awesome.
Yeah.
But really, it is what it is. It's just flat, even though costs are going up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very true. It is on the backs of a lot of hardworking people. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. Doing more with less mm-hmm. every year.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, on to another part of the agenda. Looks like there's going to be, you're going to look at changes to the student handbook for the elementary school. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if that's, how often that happens? How often is the language tweaked in the student handbooks? Is it, you know, every year, or is it, you know, every how many years?
It can get changed every year. I mean, it's up to the administrations at those schools. You know, they review what came up over the course of the year, what they think needs to be changed, what has become outdated, what's now a new thing that they had never thought of before that they need mm-hmm. to put in place. You know, they're living documents, really. And
they're an AR within the board policy. We do it so that people can have an opportunity to look at them publicly, or the board has an opportunity to weigh in, and they don't really vote on them per se, but they might have feedback, or you know, or maybe they have a question about something, and then you still have some time. The principals still have time before, you know, fall to make any adjustments to it. So not a lot of changes to the handbook this year. I think there was clarifying about kids or like people bringing in gifts for kids' birthdays or that kind of thing, and just talking about, you know, just clarifying so people understand that they'll, you know, the things will be down in the office and they'll just pick them up after school, just so people know. And then I think they're clarifying on...
There's language about absences, and
yes,
that's coming down from the state.
Yep, that's one.
Because the state will now hold the school districts accountable to whether kids are in school.
Yep, that's one of the new indicators under Every Student Succeeds Act, the ESSA Act, which is also on the agenda here. So one of the indicators for accountability, in addition to test results and a few other indicators. One of them is an indicator called chronic absenteeism. And there's a lot of conversation in the state about it, because there is a lot involved in that. It's even beyond things like excused or unexcused absences, that sort of thing. It's an easy metric, you know, because you can say they're in the seat or they're not in the seat. So I think on a state or federal level, it's one of those things that's easy to keep track of, but it doesn't always reflect the intricacies of what happens within a school system. So, for example, our students actually do have a lot of access to their teachers even when they're traveling, because of the learning management systems and the computer, you know, the technology that they're able. We even have had students more this year because of our new phone system. They actually were able to do like WebExes with our kids. So if there's some place that they can get access like that, and kids are in, let's say, physics, they will WebEx in to the class. So really, that's attendance. You know, in our minds, they're attending the class from, you know, 2:15 to 3:00 or whatever the time is. So it's a little bit tricky, you know, and of course in Southeast, you know, you're going to have kids that are going to be absent potentially for lots of different reasons than maybe somewhere else in Anchorage where you're on a road system.
It's a remote island, and there's a lot of reasons why people have to travel.
Yeah, exactly.
It's tricky.
Yeah, surgeries or, you know, medical things. I mean, all those. Yeah. So anyway, that one I think is going to continue to have to evolve, but it's one of the changes. So just, you know, trying to get a little bit ahead of that too. And yeah, anyway, just an indicator.
There's also a couple changes to the dress code. Looks like a couple. There's one saying mini dresses, mini short, mini, let me rephrase that, mini dresses, mini skirts, and short shorts are only allowed with leggings or tights. Is that, why is that?
There's been some embarrassing situations with kids, I think. They've ended up in situations where they've, you know, had undergarments showing, or they've been teased about, you know, that, like that kind of thing, or they've ended up wearing something and then ended up being out on the playground and it's too cold, or it's, you know, so it's not necessarily for the same reasons that people might be thinking of dress code issues for older kids. All those conversations, you know, that have come about, it's often more that kids, they just don't think about it as much when they're younger. You know, they put on something or whatever, and the next thing you know, it just, there's, can be undergarments and embarrassing things that happen, and then they feel bad, and anyway, so it's kind of that elementary level. So if they want to still wear longer shorts or whatever they want to wear, and they have bare legs and all that kind of stuff, it's fine. That's no big deal, you know, especially like right now. It's 70 degrees. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Wear them.
And then there was another that kind of goes into the other part of the dress code, which was dressing for appropriate weather, for rain or snow, in order to participate in outdoor activities.
Yeah, and the same sort of thing. It's more practical nature questions in the elementary, because sometimes kids, you know, like that, they'll come and they don't have a coat, or they bring a sweatshirt that gets sopped with rain, and, you know, so it's just kind of reminding the kids about those kind of things too, so that they're just prepared to be outside, or maybe don't wear the flip-flops when it's a downpour or snowing.
Yeah, always be prepared.
Yeah.
More or less for rain or snow.
Yeah, yeah, especially at that age, because, you know, when they get older, you kind of go, well, you're wet, you know, but
yeah,
it's a little more difficult when it's, they're seven, you know, you kind of, you want them to learn, but at the same time, we're,
yeah,
that's
if
part
it's
of
in
what
the morning,
doing.
Then you have the whole day to be
miserable, sitting there and being wet, you know, so just trying to help them with that a little bit, and yeah, just clarify it, I think, for people, so, yeah.
Well, you mentioned an update, I think you mentioned, was it the...
On ESSA?
Which one? You have a lot of updates coming tonight, actually, it looks like. Yeah, there's the ESSA, and then the Alaska Education Challenge, and then the Indian Education Grant.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Is there anything you wanted to touch on right now and as part of those updates?
Yeah, I think the Indian Education Grant is, that's a federal grant. I could just talk a little bit about that. And we've given a couple of updates throughout the year. That's one of the grants that we've actually really tried to put more emphasis on the last few years, as far as being more intentional about scheduling regular meetings throughout the year and making sure we really are trying to incorporate the parent advisory committee and getting feedback about activities and things that happen for our Native students in our school district. So that, and Mr. Cabral will talk a little bit about that more tonight, some of the specific activities that have happened, but it's been, so, you know, this year we focused again on taking the students to Sitka for Elizabeth Paradovich, and what's come out of that, because we've done that now twice, we have a really significant group of kids and adults who have kind of, I mean, I don't know, I think it's really sparked some interest in, you know, what do we want to do in our community here in the future, and help the kids kind of feel this, you know, interest in their own culture and wanting to do more locally. And so that's been a really nice offshoot of that. And then we also were able to support the, this is the second year with the One Paddle Canoe Society. Will Ware and Nathan Lopez have really helped coordinate that. And actually, that effort has grown to most of the communities in Southeast. Like, everybody's kind of done it this year. They've actually moved through. They went to Cake and Kluwak and here, and they've done a lot of workshops. And so there's a lot of movement, I think, in that area too. And so we had that workshop here a few weeks ago in April in our shop here. And so some of the Native Indian education dollars were used, for the paddle making workshop. So that was pretty awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what's the Alaska Energy Education Challenge, and what's the new requirement? new accountability requirement, it says.
Yeah. So the education challenge is the challenge that we've talked a little bit about over the last year or so, that the governor actually kind of put this out last year. It's been about a year, I think, and or maybe a year and a half. And he had, you know, he kind of put this out there, like, we're looking for transforming education in our state. And it's looking at the achievement gap. It's looking at, you know, addressing some of the issues with our rural schools. And, and so he put it out there as this challenge. And then they put together a group of people across the state, kind of like our strategic planning. That's really what they were doing, but doing it in the state, at a state level, and asking all kinds of stakeholders to come together and look, you know, at some of the specific issues which have to do with student achievement, student wellness, and then, you know, preparing students for the future. Basically, that's really a rough way of putting it. But and I think they're real, honestly, distilling it down, the real goal that he had, and I think our the Commissioner of Education the same way, is how do we all as a state have some sort of common language around what we're trying to do so that everybody kind of has their own strategic plans, you know, which is great because people have to have their own, you know, each community has its own flavor. But what are we doing as a state to, you know, kind of have everybody talk in the same language? And that meant even utilizing it to talk with legislators this year, you know, so that they're on the same page, we're all using the same language. And it was really beneficial, I have to say. It was helpful this year, I think, during lobbying efforts that we had up there. They knew what it was. It's easy to kind of hang your hat on that. So that's kind of where that is. And then we had training a couple weeks ago on ESSA, which is, for those of us that are old, which is now me, in education, No Child Left Behind. When that came into being, early 2000s, this is sort of the next iteration of No Child Left Behind. So with that comes new and updated accountability measures for every, for all of our students, for all of our schools and districts.
But it's state. It's for the state. It's federal.
It's federal coming
to
the state.
I know that it just seems like that can be a little tricky because Alaska is such a different kind of place.
Exactly.
It's remote and not everything, you know, fits.
Fits, exactly. So they did allow each state, and actually that's what just got submitted 3 weeks ago, is the state's ESSA plan based on the federal requirements is what was submitted and accepted, but now translating that into what that actually looks like September 1st of 2018 is kind of what we were talking about with the chronic absenteeism. That's one of the indicators. So a few years ago, we had those ASPE star ratings. I don't know if you remember that, but it was the state's rating process for how your schools are doing. And it was based on a couple of things too, you know, some test scores. There were three or four indicators there. So we're required to have some sort of accountability system like that. So whether it's to the state and then from the state to the feds, it's the law. So they've tried to work through what that might look like in our state based on what the federal requirements are. And so they did open it up a little bit, which is good. Like, one of the things that they've done is it used to be only based on, like, student achievement. So if they were taking their it used to be AMP, but now it's PEAKS, test, state test. How did they do? That was a huge part of just basically where your score was. You looked at individual subgroups, but it was basically that's how you were rated. That doesn't take into account kids and how they grow from year to year. And that was always the argument that a lot of educators had was, you know, we also aren't always can't account for everything that maybe a child's endured in their life before they come to us. There are a lot of kids dealing with trauma. There's a whole host of reasons why kids might not perform. So can we also have some sort of indicator that says they come in, they're performing here, and at the end of the year, they're performing here? And so is there some accountability measure for that? Well, there is now. So that's good. I mean, I think that's important. Kids should grow, and I hope that they do. They should. That's our job.
And the school should get credit.
Right, for helping
that child grow.
Yeah, helping them get from one point to the next. So that's a positive change, I think, in ESSA as compared to kind of the old.
It's looking at more things.
Yeah. There's a few more, you know, pieces in there. So graduation rate is one of them. Another one. English learner progress. So they're specifically asking for, there's a specific component, a percentage of the accountability indicator is actually based on how English language learners are performing as well, their own subgroup as their own indicator, which is very new. We don't have a huge population of English, non-English speaking students here. I think we have about 9 that actually qualify in our ELL English language learner category, but lots of districts have a lot of students. Like Anchorage has the most.
Yeah, it's so diverse.
Languages, I think they still are the district that has the most languages spoken in the country, actually.
It's pretty like amazing. 90, west or east.
98 or something. 98 languages, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah.
So that's its own indicator, which is new. Interesting. But again, needing to show growth for all students, and I think that clearly must have been an area that they weren't seeing the growth they were expecting. And then chronic absenteeism, and then there's also a separate indicator that's just for grade 3 ELA proficiency. So a lot of research out there about students, if they're not reading at grade level by grade 3, there's a whole host of a lot of research out there about what happens beyond that, so that there's a lot of correlations to kids and how they do in the future based on that one indicator. So we do a great job with that in our district, but it's, again, if, you know, it's based on that state test. So if they're not technically proficient on that state test, then that's one of those things. So anyway, those are the indicators.
Wow.
Yeah, lots.
Lots of testing, lots of accountability, but we're in May, so, I mean.
I know, exactly.
I mean, for you, this stuff never ends, but at least for parents and students, there's a summer.
Yeah. And amazing things going on. Like, let's not talk about this stuff for a minute. Let's talk about the fact that we just sent all these kids on helicopters today to the glacier.
Oh,
and
really? That happened
for
today.
The LeConte,
oh,
survey, and National Geographic is with these kids. And
oh, wow.
We just sent the fourth graders up the river today.
I did see them at the grade school this morning. Yeah. And there was just people looking very summery
yes.
and ready to
and
soak up
this,
the sun.
And that is an incredible field trip opportunity for our kids. So
very lucky that the weather for today, to
amazing.
All those field trips happening.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really
all
lucky.
Of them today. So, you know, so many amazing things happening every day in all these classrooms. And on that note, it is Teacher and Staff Appreciation Week this week, and it's actually National Teachers Day today, May 8th. So I would just like to recognize all of our amazingly hardworking teachers and staff.
Mm-hmm. Thank a teacher today.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, and I'll be seeing you tonight for the school board meeting, which again starts at 7 o'clock in the middle and high school library at 6:15. There's a student recognition happening out in the commons.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right. Take care.